Recording?
Yeah, recording.
This is Mom's Basement Podcast, episode 36.
Yep.
Yeah, we didn't fuck it up that time.
Nope.
So,
yeah.
So, Rudy, we need to talk to you.
Alrighty.
I don't think Dan is going to return you is going to return your affections.
Yeah, see, I'm thinking probably not either. It's sad, but it's the truth.
Are you ready to move on?
Yeah, I guess. Maybe.
But dude, what are we going to do at the beginning of the show now?
I'll find another man crush.
Yeah?
Probably. And there's still Callahan S,
Someone who will appreciate your affection.
Yeah. Totally.
I mean, Dan's just so damn cold.
Yeah, he's giving me the cold shoulder here.
Response.
Yeah, no, it's...
It's like you don't even exist to him.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
I feel invisible.
Ice queen. Those pierced eyes and that cold stare.
Yeah.
Man, I can tell why you fell for him.
You're a cold, hard man, Dan Maruschak.
But a sexy man.
Indeed.
Restraining order filed now. No, that's... Okay.
Anyway.
So, we just sat down and Alex Swingle's game. Since none of you guys are sending us games, we're playing our own games now. Alex,
all right, so yeah, we played a fantastic round of a game called Crystal Capers, and this was the long-awaited game that I teased for a very long time that I was going to send them, and then we finally got around to actually doing it this time.
Yep.
Anyways, the entire purpose of the game is you are a man or a woman, you know, in modern times, and the trick with this one is magic used to exist, and it existed through the power of crystals like rubies and emeralds and sapphires, you know, stuff like that. Mm. But the knowledge became lost, and your character have finally been able to figure out how to use them.
Mm.
And hijinks ensue.
Yeah. And they certainly did in the playtest we did.
There were plenty of hijinks.
Yeah.
What do you think the hijinks quotient was this time? Do you think it was higher than usual?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think so. It was set in Africa, and somebody was playing a Joseph Kony-type dude.
Yeah.
So it was bound to be pretty high.
And I was somebody, by the way.
Yeah.
I don't know, Alex, do you have anything more to say about the game before we get into critiquing the game?
Alright, well, some of the things that I was doing here was I wanted to create a system where it kind of reminds me of the things about like D&D, where it has a whole bunch of rules attached to it, and almost none of them are actually useful at all.
Mm.
Mm.
Followed by a magic system that really didn't make sense and was so verbose and complex that it pretty much it made it to where anyone who wanted to be a spellcaster had so much on their plate that it was ridiculous.
Mm.
And a lot of it wasn't fun.
Yeah, that.
Yeah, a lot of it wasn't fun. And so what I wanted to do was I wanted to have a more modern setting, and I wanted to have, I wanted to make it close to the person who wanted to, like, you know, who wanted to read it and play it, because, you know, they live in modern times.
Mm.
And then followed by give, like, you know, to bring back that magic of how the common world that we live in has still some magic left in it, but we just don't know it exists anymore.
Right.
So the idea is to make the mundane magical.
Mm.
Yeah.
And I think
there you go. Now you guys can rip it apart.
Well, and I think that's a cool pitch, although I've always been about making the magical mundane. But I think... Oh, Rudy?
Well, I think the pitch is pretty interesting, and what I think is interesting also is that it's set in modern day, and it uses like a kind of secret history type thing without it being overbearing and stupid. Like White Wolf.
That's true. And I like the fact that it's not really a, you know, when you have these secret history games, like you said, Rudy, usually it's opaque, or it's goofy, or it's like, you know, there's some secret society, and they're governed by some set of ancient laws, or some nonsense like that.
Yeah.
My single favorite moment in the short little design document you sent me, Alex, was when you talk about the way that the government has been installing these crystals into basically microwave ovens and stoves and things in order to make them more fuel efficient. And then you don't know that it's more fuel efficient, though, because they're taking that extra money out as basically tax revenue, or they're using it as subsidies or something like that. And I thought that's really clever, because that's what would happen if we had this secret technology. The government would just, like, use it, you know, it would just be another trust fund for them to raid, basically. You know,
yeah.
Like Social Security, they would just have their, you know, they'd just be ankle deep in that shit. And, and it would just become part of the bigger bureaucracy. You know, there'd be nothing mystical or special or ancient or traditional about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's what I was really trying to go for there, was in terms of the background setting, was all because something is magical doesn't mean they have to be ridiculous about it. They're just being really practical with what they could do if they had magic.
Right.
Right.
And I like that. I like the fact that it's secret government subsidies, not the fucking Knights Templar and business suits, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, one thing I would say is that since it was just a short design document, that world really isn't fleshed out too much yet, and I would have liked to see even more of those details. And I know that, and I guess Rudy can speak more to this since he was GMing, but I know that figuring out when the crystals should come into play was always kind of tricky, since we didn't have that extra setting knowledge, since we had just that little blurb. And I think more about when the crystals become a factor in play, how frequently they should become a factor in play, that kind of stuff. And more, you know, little setting details to give you an idea of how to use them in play and in what kinds of circumstances they would show up would be helpful.
Yeah, I'd say that would be helpful, but also I'd say definitely include some little flavor text about, like, the different types of crystals, like the different types of gems and that kind of stuff. Because we had Wikipedia open, and we were going off of that, the birthstones and that kind of stuff. But I think including some flavor text, you know, that kind of shows what it's like in that world would be pretty cool.
Oh, the birthstones thing. I would say... I would double down on that. I would make that a real part of character creation, almost like picking a class or a specialization. You pick your birthstone at the start, and the features that are associated with it, the abilities that are associated with it, the personality traits that are associated with it, give you a jumping-off point for your character.
Yeah.
I actually like that a bit, because I was thinking of having that, but I really didn't do enough time doing my research on that one. That was definitely a big fault.
Because right now, character creation is cool, but it's kind of generic. You know, it doesn't feel like character creation for a game that's specifically about using magic gems. Mm. And I think having something like that to serve as a foundation for character generation would let people know right away what the flavor of the game is. You know, what's this game about? What's the hook?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
And it's...
So, Abe...
I was just going to say, it's good to have that kind of... those kinds of bits in character generation, you know, the bits that clue you off to the type of game you're playing, and also serve really as bait to get people to really get into the game, you know? To be able to pick something cool off a list is really how I've hooked a lot of people to, you know, D&D. You know, ooh, look at these classes, look at their abilities, look, and you can pick one of them, you know?
Yeah.
It's a good entrance point for newbies.
Yeah, definitely.
Rudy?
Yep, so, yeah, well, what were you going to say, Alex?
Well, no, I was trying to direct you guys to say something else because I don't really feel like it would be appropriate for me since, you know, I'm the one who actually came up with it to talk about the pros and cons of what I think the game is.
Oh, okay, yeah. Well, another thing I liked about it was the dice system. Mm. Because it's so random that it, and it's a good kind of random. It's like basically, what is it, you roll your, well, you roll, you have a pool of dice that you gather from, like, your stats and your, what were they called, like, the special knowledges, and then you roll them, and then you roll another set of dice, they're different colored or something, for the challenge. So, like, if you had a challenge of two, you roll 2d6, and then you'd also roll any of your dice that you had from your abilities. And then you you find the mode of the roll, so you the one that comes up the most, and then everything below that gets dropped. And then
gets dropped in both sets of
dice. In both sets of dice, yeah. And that's how you determine success or failure.
And then you compare the number of dice left.
Yep.
In both sets. So say, your skill was 4d6. Your challenge was 2d6. Your 4d6 roll came up a 1, a 2, and 2 3s. Mm. And your 2d6 challenge came up a 3 and a 5. So you would, 3 is the mode then. You yep. throw out the 3 3s mm. and everything below it.
Yeah.
Which means the 1 and the 2 also.
Yeah.
And only the challenge would have 1 left since it had the 5.
Right.
The challenge would have 1 die left. So the challenge just beat your ass.
Yeah. And I like that system because it's random, but basically, it lets you roll a lot of dice and feel like you're kind of on top, but it can really go either way. And that's one thing.
Well, that's one thing I definitely liked about it, was the fact that it doesn't completely eliminate the mechanical advantage of rolling more dice or having you know, a higher number in your stat.
Right.
But unlike systems like D&D and... you know, so many of the other mechanical systems that I've played where if you have, you know, you reach a point where you are rolling so many dice or you have such a large modifier or whatever that you steamroll something that you can say, okay, I'm rolling 5 dice and the challenge is only rolling 1. I know I'm going to get more successes than the challenge, if you're talking in, you know, White Wolf terms.
Right.
I know that I am going to beat the challenge. I'm going to add my dice together, and the number is going to be bigger than the challenge, and the odds of it being anything else are, you know, just one in a million.
Right.
What I liked here was there really is still, even if you're rolling, and I think in one circumstance I was rolling like 6 dice and the challenge was rolling 2 and the challenge still won.
Yeah.
So there's still the possibility, even though there's still an advantage to rolling 6 dice, so you don't feel like, oh, it's even ground no matter what.
Right.
That advantage is not so universal and so big that it's not possible for the 2-die challenge to win. So there's always a sense of tension there. There's always, you know, the possibility that you might fuck up. So nothing's given. And I think that's cool.
Yeah, I'd say that's pretty much what I thought was cool, too. And also the fact that, like, you have luck, a luck rating, which, instead of hit points, basically. And once that decreases, you get knocked out of the challenge. So really, there's no way to kill your character. I mean, unless you and the DM come to some, you know, agreement, and that's what you're gonna do. But there's no way to really, to keep you knocked out for the whole game. And you won't have to reroll characters a lot or anything like that, so.
Alright, so how was character creation itself? How difficult was it?
Well, I didn't create a character because I was the GM, but it seemed like it was pretty straightforward. And, you know, points here, and then you'll have some points. Well, you take points out of here and then put some points there. That kind of thing, and the only thing that might be a little difficult is coming up with knowledges that are useful. I think that might be something that, maybe just give some examples of knowledges, or maybe give some example of how players can tailor that towards their game, their individual setting, and stuff like that, because knowledges might be a little bit hairy.
Yeah, I mean, I could see how that might be hard to come up with, but it's really not that much unlike how traits function in Ingeniero.
Yeah.
And I think it's really a matter of knowing before you start the game what kind of game this is going to be.
Yeah.
And once you have that out of the way, you know, once players know that and understand that, I think it's pretty easy to come up with custom knowledges that you feel will be applicable.
Yeah.
And character generation, I thought, was, you know, very straightforward, very simple, very easy. One thing I would have liked to see is more real emphasis, and this isn't just in character generation, but I would like to see the gem theme come up more in play, you know, more in the character generation process and more in the play itself. I would like to see the mechanics be more tightly connected to this main idea of, you know, these magical gems, because it seems like that's the pitch of the game, right? That's what people are being sold on. And at least when we were playing, it really didn't come up until the end of the game. Now, and I know that's at the GM's discretion to some degree, and you can decide that you have items on you that are gems, so that if you choose to, you could really force it into the game, but it didn't really seem like an essential part of the game.
Yeah.
Okay.
What I'm saying, I guess, is it didn't seem like the mechanics of the game really kept pulling you back towards the main idea, the concept. It seems like they were generic, you know, not in a bad way. You know, they were functional and generic, but they were generic in the sense of they could have been used to run any type of game. as opposed to specifically being tailored to run this game.
All right, I understand.
Yeah.
No, that's definitely very helpful to hear.
Yeah. Trying to think of some other stuff. Yeah, I mean, I guess...
Because I know that we were talking... sorry, go ahead, Rudy.
Oh, no problem. Go ahead.
I know when we were actually playing it, there was some confusion on what I wrote for the stats.
Oh, yeah.
Because a lot of the stuff that we were doing was mainly reflex skills.
Right.
For the stats, but very few of the actual conversation pieces that we did involved actually using like mental or physical improv. That was a little vague.
Yeah, I feel like there is almost too much overlap between these different abilities. It's hard to determine exactly what you're supposed to use in any given circumstance. I know a lot of times we could have picked two or even three different stats. There was an argument that could be made for, like, well, is this reflexes or is this physical improvisation?
Yeah.
Is this mental improvisation or is this mental strength?
Right.
And I think, I mean, there's really two different ways you could go to fix that issue. One, probably the simplest way would be to just decide exactly what each of these existing abilities do, and then write little paragraphs that really say, really delineates, this is what luck does, this is what physical strength does, this is what mental strength does, and all the way down the line. The other thing you could do is consider condensing a few of them. Say, maybe physical improvisation and reflexes are very similar, you know?
Right.
Maybe those two should be rolled into the same thing. Or maybe you should have another stat that, you know, that is more clearly separate in what it does compared to the others.
Yeah, like maybe renaming some of them so that way there'll be no confusion.
Yeah. And, I keep hearing my voice fed back to me, and that's why my voice is slowing down so much, because I'm listening to myself as I speak. But what I was going to say, you know, mental improvisation, you were saying, is really bullshit artistry. You know, it's con artistry. So I wonder if you might call that something like persuasion, you know, whereas physical strength, or excuse me, mental strength, you said was more about your mental endurance, which was something that confused me a little bit, because I thought it was more like clarity of mind or willpower, you know, I thought it was something you could use offensively, as opposed to being something that was purely sort of defensive.
Right.
So maybe if you gave a name that, like endurance, you know, that lets people know, okay, this is to be defensive.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, and one other thing maybe is that there should maybe be some clearer guidelines as to, like, when luck gets lowered, like when you lose luck, as a, you know, like, because I know there were some times in like the combats and that kind of stuff where I wasn't sure, like, if you should use luck or I mean if you should lose luck for what happened or not. So
because like the one time that I actually lost a point of luck was that when that was and there was an obvious point in combat.
Yeah.
And I lost the round, but there were many times where there was mental combats, you know, like persuasion and such. And some guys would lose or win, but you know, I didn't say whether or not that was, you know, you was luck or not.
Yeah.
because I mainly made it a literal HD reference instead of negative where it could affect me sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Alright, so is there, like, besides the dice system, was there anything you noticed during play that you liked the system that was doing?
Well, once again, the resolution system really makes the combat, well, not just the combat, but the flow of play more dynamic than it is in a lot of other dice games that I've played, you know. In a lot of other, you know, basic dice resolution RPGs, the game slows the fuck down when you pick up the dice.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an unfortunate reality of a lot of these games. And this game doesn't slow down. And also, another unfortunate reality of a lot of these games is that the dice are usually either obnoxious or a formality. Like, oh, I don't want to roll the dice because I'm going to lose if I roll the dice.
Yeah.
Or, oh, I don't even have to roll the dice. Do I have to roll the dice? I guess to see if I get a critical hit or not. Or a critical success, or whatever you want to call it. In this game, you always want to roll the dice, because it's quick. You get the tactile sensation of chucking a bunch of dice on the table, which are the good things from the dice, from any dice game. But also, you don't know what that outcome is going to be. You want to see the outcome, because it's not a foregone conclusion. And even if you get screwed, you can roll with it.
Yeah, exactly. And I like the way the dice kind of tell you, like, a little bit about the situation, too. Like, you can read the dice and basically tell, like, maybe how you failed or how you fucked up, or to what degree you fucked up and what degree you failed.
And I would like to see that almost fleshed out. Maybe a chart or something that shows degree of success or shows how you find the details of your success or the details of your failure based on your result.
Because to give one example, during play was when you were trying to contemplate shooting somebody that was defenseless. And what ended up happening was you rolled your dice and it looked like a foregone conclusion. That was the one where, you know, you had your 8 dice and you end up failing it.
Yeah. I was rolling.
And, sorry, but the whole thing was that failure there, while by, like, all the numbers of the dice roll for the positive and the negative, you saw that, like, oh, shoot, I screwed up on this. How did I screw up on this? Maybe I couldn't pull the trigger.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And that was pretty demoralizing for my character.
And then we had the one dice roll where, like, my character had to shoot a guy with a beard. He was in a tank.
Yeah.
His name wasn't Dan, by the way. But
no, it wasn't.
He had a magnificent beard.
Totally wasn't.
And I had such a low chance of succeeding on that one, and then I was able to pull it off, and then that created, like, one of the most memorable scenes because that random dice resolution made it possible for me to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the contrast of the two scenes that you mentioned really shows how climatic this can be, this system. Because really, that failure that I got, where I rolled 8 dice against 2, and where the situation really reflected that, right? I had the gun in my hand. The victim was defenseless. I was standing over them, getting ready to pull the trigger. So it looked like a foregone conclusion, exactly as you said. But then the dice came up, and boom, I didn't do it.
Yeah.
And I think the end result of that was more interesting than had I pulled the trigger and killed the innocent kid.
Yeah.
Because I had to be like, shit, how did that even happen?
Yeah.
And I think the character had to be like, shit, what happened to me? You know, I was a ruthless warlord, and I just can't pull the trigger. he had to sit down and reflect on that. And it took him out of the game for a little while, which was cool because it let the other characters kind of take control of the situation, you know? It broke his will in an interesting way. Hmm. And it was very climatic, you know? It almost created a cinematic kind of scene where the guy's standing over you and he's going to pull the trigger and he's going to pull the trigger. But he doesn't.
Yeah.
And it did it without the players stepping in to undermine what their characters wanted to do.
Yeah, see, that's true.
Cool. Which is something that most games don't do. I mean, you could have easily gotten that scene if I had decided to fudge things in the background and say, oh, you know what, I don't really want him to pull the trigger, so I'll do this so he doesn't pull the trigger. But the fact that the system generated an outcome like that, and generated an outcome like that without skewing the odds in any way.
Right.
You know, it's just looking at the dice you roll, the odds were so strongly in my favor, at least if you looked at it superficially, but it still came up with a totally unexpected outcome. And the same thing with what Alex mentioned. You know, the scene where he pulls the gun and shoots the tank.
Yeah.
It's not like the number of dice he was rolling was skewed to give the dramatic outcome where he punches a hole in the tank with his gun and so forth. But because there's that extra little degree of randomness in the dice rolls, a crazy cinematic outcome happened on its own without anyone juking the dice in the background, and I thought that was pretty cool.
Right.
Yeah, overall, what I'm hearing from you guys is dice system rocks. I need to flesh out more of just a whole bunch of stuff in general.
Yeah. Yep. It's mostly about fleshing out and really pulling the game back to the main idea, you know, your concept. Really making sure that the mechanics reinforce that main idea of people using gems for magical purposes.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I think we can wrap that up then. Let's leave it on a high note.
Yeah, okay. That's cool.
So, what we decided to do, it's 2:37 a.m. here. I don't know what Dan over up. Dan. Uh-oh, Alex. They just called me Dan. Alex, over on the West Coast, what time is it there?
It's almost midnight.
Oh, man. So we are thoroughly sleep-deprived. So I think it's time for some random bullshit.
Random bullshit part 2.
Yeah. Random bullshit, the sequel. We don't give a shit.
We don't give a fuck.
Or a fuck.
Honestly, I think it's random bullshit, like, 34.
Yeah, probably.
There was that one podcast we did where we stayed on topic, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, it was Mizu Tourism Games. That's the only time it was there.
Yeah. Because we were trying to pimp our games and whatnot.
By the way, MiseryTourism.com. Yeah. Terrible games about terrible people.
Yeah.
Hey, random bullshit.
Alright, so even though this is a round of random bullshit, yeah, we do have some topics that we can talk about.
Yes, we do. We have a whole bunch of topics. Ooh, I have one. This is a plea for help from our audience of nobody. Okay. So back in 1988, when I was like 4 years old, my grandparents had an old Apple IIe computer, and someone, I don't remember who, I think it was a relative or something, brought over this game, and I only saw it played, like, twice, right? It was a side-scrolling game. I think it was a side-scrolling adventure game. It may have been set in space, or it may have been set in a fantasy setting, but all I know is on the first screen, if you made your character go right, they ran into a man-eating plant. And they had to figure out how to get past an eating plant. I think you had to go left first and get something. But if you go right from the main screen, there's a man-eating plant blocking your way. This is all I remember. I've been trying to find this game again for years. Can someone fucking help me, please?
Yes. Okay. See, I never had an Apple II, so I never really got into most of those games, so I really don't know.
Man, some of those games were epic. I remember there was this really tedious submarine simulator.
Yeah, the farthest I went back for those kind of games was when I played the original Oregon Trail.
Oh, man.
Oh, wow, Oregon Trail. I love that game.
Yeah, because what happened was a friend of ours, he had a bucket load of old DOS games.
Hmm.
And, of course, our computer was, during that time period, where DOS was still prevalent.
Yeah.
And so, just, like, dropped it over from us. And, you know, there was Prince of Persia, freaking Reader Rabbit.
Yep, I remember Reader Rabbit.
Yeah, and so, like, one of the most played games, Oregon Trail, just because
it was the only one that
just
was
made no sense. It made no sense, and it was silly as hell.
Hmm.
It's like you could pretend to be serious about it, but
oh yeah,
it was just you really couldn't do anything at all in that game.
No, you couldn't. And you know what? If you tried to use anything vaguely resembling common sense survival tactics, like for example, take your time and get fruits, you know, gather fruits and vegetables and hunt sporadically, you would lose that fucking game. Everyone would get cholera and die. The only way you could win that game was to basically drive your oxen to death, go as fast as you possibly can, stop every once in a while and kill every animal in a certain area.
Yeah.
So until there was nothing left of the ecosystem, load up on meat, and then just fucking truck it.
Yeah.
And hope that all your oxen didn't die fording the rivers.
Yeah, fording the river was awesome. I remember, since it was considered like an educational type game, it was installed on all the middle school computers when I was going there, and what we used to do is we used to log into other people's games, is people would save their games, and we used to log into other people's games and fuck with them, and that was really fun. That was fun times.
Like, what would you do?
Well, like, I think there was a shop or something that you could go to and buy shit from, and we would buy a bunch of useless stuff, and sometimes we'd just fucking push the oxen so hard and we'd ford the river a shit ton of times till they died. That kind of stuff. It's pretty
Rudy
neat.
Rudy Johnson, trolling since middle school. Trolling since 12 years old.
Keep trolling, 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 trolling.
Yeah, speaking of that one, that was always kind of weird, like with some of the budget plans for our educational system in general.
Yeah.
Where you look at that game, there's no way in hell it was, like, truly educational. So it's the most loosely based term of educational.
Right.
Yet, for some reason, yep, there goes our middle school, you know, plopping down $30 a copy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes you wonder sometimes, like, who's actually in charge of the budget down there.
Yeah, that's pretty weird. I remember they also had SimCity on the computers, too, so...
Yes, I remember that. That was the best thing ever in middle school, because...
Yeah, it was.
I don't know, because you weren't doing shitty work.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay,
dead air.
I'm actually going to try and put this back onto a topic of some sort.
Okay.
Will, you wanted to talk about Magic the Gathering one of these days.
Did I want to talk about Magic the Gathering? That
yes,
seems
you
like
did.
Something I would never want to talk about.
No, you did, and you said, like, yeah, one of these days I want to talk about, like, Magic on the podcast.
I seem to remember, Alex, you saying you wanted to talk about magic.
Don't try to reverse this on me, pal. We know you wanted to talk about Magic the Gathering.
And I don't remember you saying Magic the Gathering. I remember you just saying magic.
Yeah, I remember the magic thing.
What it was is you wrote down for Misery Tourism Games and you said MTG.
Oh.
Oh.
I went, oh, yeah, I'll bring my cards, bro. And oh, then yeah. Followed by you saying, damn it, son of a bee.
Yeah. Then, that's right. Man, most unfortunate acronym ever.
MTG.
But honestly, when I was like, I don't know, in high school, I played so much Magic and wasted so much money on fucking Magic cards, it's unbelievable. They're sitting on my hoop chest right now because I dug them out and someone was trying to come over and trying to convince me to sell my collection.
So what's in your hope chest, anyways? Since, you have a lack of
basically, what I put in my hope chest is whatever junk was in my room the last time someone insisted that I clean it. I don't know what's in the hope chest. The hope chest is... The D&D manuals used to be in there, but I dug them out because I was using them. Magic cards used to be in there, but I dug those out because one of those... I think there's a lot of old paychecks in there from when I was substitute teaching. And loan payment forms. Loan deferment forms.
What?
Damn, I should... If my headphones will reach the... Oh, they're not going to reach that far. Let's see if I can open the whole chat. Opening the... Man, this is the worst fucking podcast. Oh, I'm not going to be able to get all the magic cards off here.
Aw. Oh,
okay, I'm going to have to take my headphones out, so now's the time to talk about me.
Okay.
William has great hair.
Yeah, he does. It's like sexy hair.
I mean, almost like Lancelot style. Long, flowing.
Yeah, it's
just
it's definitely like the page boy type style.
Yeah, totally.
Yep, I would sex him.
I guess that's why you guys are friends, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Sex on the side. Yeah.
There's a secret relationship inside there. No one talks about it, but it's there.
Yep. Yep, pretty much.
It's kind of taboo. It's kind of taboo, too.
Oh, no, it's definitely taboo. Because, like, yeah.
Because I think we're
being in the hope chest.
Oh, boy.
Man, it's so hard to spell. Still taking
in the fucking hope chest. Most of this is scrap paper, I'll be honest.
Oh, wow. I wonder if there's any condoms in there.
Box for my phone?
Nope.
This was a pretty decent one here. Like, one time I heard on podcast, I believe it was the late great thing, where they were talking about, like, the same kind of thing a person would be saying right now, like, why in the hell am I listening to this?
And I would agree.
And the answer that the main guy gave, which was, like, one of the greatest answers in the world for, like, anything in general, and it was something, like, along the lines of, you know, what do you listen to the news for? Why do you listen to, like, a certain broadcast? You're listening to them because you want to hear what they have to say.
That's a good point.
I don't think anyone wants to listen to what we have to say.
Nah.
But anyway, I've been through the hope chest, and I've removed some of the choicest items, and maybe we can have a discussion about that.
Alrighty.
Okay, on the top of my pile is... Oh, here we go. The Diablo 2 Battle Chest.
Yes. Does it have the discs in it?
It has some of the discs in it.
Oh, I see.
Wait, let's see if it has all of them. Diablo 2? Yeah. The cinematics disc.
Oh, yeah.
It has all of the discs in here.
Oh, nice.
Cinematics disc. The original Diablo disc for Diablo 1.
Right.
The play disc. The install disc. Jesus Christ. Remember the day before we had DVDs?
Yeah.
And the expansion set, Heart of Destruction.
Yeah.
It's all in there.
We talked a lot about Diablo 2 before, so I think we do.
Okay, we're going to Diablo 2. How about...
I mean, we went gaga for like 10 minutes over like the comparisons of that and Diablo 3.
Yeah. Which I can't wait for, by the way.
Yeah, you mentioned that. Isn't that next month?
Yep.
In fact, it's a month from today, isn't it?
A month and a couple days, I think.
Well, here is a felt-covered cardboard brontosaurus that was hanging on my wall when I was a really young kid.
Yeah. Would you like to share some memories about that one? Anything special about it?
No, I don't remember it at all, except that it used to hang on my wall when I was a kid. That's it.
Huh.
No special memories or emotional attachment.
Brontosaurus, huh? Yeah.
A copy of the Wallace Stevens Journal. Oh, wait, no, this is a Cambridge Companion to Wallace Stevens.
Huh.
Who was not a very good poet.
Wasn't he also, like, a racist?
He was a racist dude.
Yeah.
I was going to tell a story, and then I said that's probably not safe for podcasts. Story about Wallace Stevens.
No.
Well, when Alice Walker received her, she was inducted into some literary society that Wallace Stevens was a member of. He said, "What's that coon doing here?" That was his take on, like, African Americans being allowed to participate in literature.
Yeah.
Dude is remembered as one of the great modernist poets, though.
Hmm.
Even though he wasn't.
Well, isn't that kind of like that whole thing with, like, Thomas Jefferson and all that, and, you know, that kind of stuff, where a lot of the most famous people for doing something positive are mainly, like, very negative if you actually looked at them?
Poor Thomas Jefferson.
Most influential people were terrible human beings.
Like, wasn't Martin Luther King, Jr. there? Wasn't, like, he, like, constantly had, like, affairs with his wife?
Yeah, he weren't with his wife.
Yeah, with several other women. Yeah.
No, he was one hell of a philanderer.
Yeah.
And also a plagiarist, actually.
Hmm.
His doctoral dissertation was heavily plagiarized.
Hmm.
When I was in graduate
school... What was he a doctor of?
Theology?
Oh, theology. Okay.
It was, you know, he's a...
Irreverent.
Irreverent. So it was I think that would be theology.
Yeah, something like that. Or religion.
When I was in graduate school, we had a professor who wrote a whole book on that topic.
Hmm.
And he had an interesting argument that it had more to do with, as opposed to being outright plagiarism, it had more to do with the oral tradition and the way that they structure, because within his denomination, the way they structured, when they would preach a sermon, you would draw heavily from existing sermons. You know, you wouldn't write the whole sermon from scratch.
Oh.
Take word for word, you know, bits and pieces from previous sermons, and then you'd use that as, like, a kernel to grow your sermon out of.
Right.
So the argument is that he was using that same rhetorical tactic in his doctoral dissertation.
Oh.
Which, of course, was extremely inappropriate for a doctoral dissertation because it was called plagiarism. But,
yeah.
Oh, also in there, my college diploma. Yeah. That deserves to be in there with the rest of the trash.
I'm guessing it hasn't served you well.
No, not particularly. Oh. That 3.9 GPA can basically suck my dick. It has done very little for me. Yeah. Except
what was you doing your major in and all that stuff?
Well, it was English literature, so that doesn't help.
Well, yeah, isn't that one of those professions where, like, when you learn about it, pretty much all you can do is just teach other people English?
Yeah, or, well, you know, you editorial positions, or if you go to graduate school, journalism, or whatever. But, yeah, basically, you can do shit with it. Also, English and political science.
Oh. Yeah.
I always thought that was pretty interesting, like, for some of the, some of the people there when they choose their majors and their minors. So it was pretty interesting because just some of those teachings are only there because other people have nothing else to like do with that knowledge. They're just there to teach it again to somebody else.
Yeah, that's all it's good for. Yeah, we're really just subsidizing useless knowledge. That's what college is. Yeah. Subsidizing the careers of a few professors so that they can continue to create knowledge that's that has no use to anyone, no practical application. Even, like, I mean, not even practical application, no aesthetic application, you know? No, improves no one's quality of life in any way except their own.
That's very true.
Friggin' my math teacher was almost like the perfect example of that, where all she ever did was try and she barely actually taught you inside the book, and almost all the questions that we had to do were inside the book, but she would just give us prints of stuff that was in the book already. So we just bought the book for, like, no freaking reason. But she was one of the authors for it.
Yep.
Doesn't that always happen where it's just like they're completely useless and all they're usually doing is asking you to buy their book?
Yeah, I had several classes. It gets worse than graduate school. And graduate school is basically nothing but an excuse for professors to get you to buy their book, since their class is more heavily specialized on their area of research. So then they have the perfect pretense to make you buy their shit.
What was the choicest of books that you had to go buy for, like, some that was completely pointless?
Well, I don't know if the book was pointless, but when I was at Penn State in graduate school, and you know now with all that's happened at Penn State, it's like, oof.
No boy, yeah.
I really can't. This story can't compare it to some what other people, the misfortune others have experienced at Penn State. But I had a professor who was, he was tenured, and he had a pretty prestigious career, but by this point, he was in his late 70s and deep into senility, like, deep, deep into senility. Like, he would start a sentence and just completely forget what he was talking about, and he would, like, get angry, just, like, irrationally angry at random points in the middle of the class, and he would repeat things, like, over and over and over again, and not in a, like, a teaching way, just, like, droning, empty repetition, like dementia.
Wow.
This guy was sitting there, still teaching class, because he was tenured, and because having his name in the faculty list was valuable to the university, because they could advertise, you know, based on the prestige he had accumulated from the public, what he had published when he was still sane. You know, in his pre-Alzheimer's days, he had published some shit. And I, actually, he made us buy his book, too. And I swear to God, his book was nothing but page after page of him defining his terms in meticulous, meticulous detail.
Wow.
It was nothing but, you know, establishing his terms.
Wow.
There was very little argument there, and the argument that was there was very weak, very poorly substantiated, excuse me. But he defined his terms like a motherfucker.
Can you give us, like, one or two that were, like...
Yeah, give us some choice terms.
This is the one that pissed me off, and continues to piss me off to this day. Strategic essentialism. Now, if you know what either of those words mean, well, actually, if you know what both of those words mean, you understand that there cannot be such a thing as strategic essentialism. What strategic essentialism is, basically, is saying, I acknowledge that there is no such thing as objective truth, or that it's unobtainable, but I'm going to strategically decide that this personal thing, this area of personal concern is objective truth.
Wow.
So it's basically, what strategic essentialism is deciding basically that my pet project trumps your pet project, and it's more important. And I am acknowledging within my terminology that it's just my pet project, but it's more important, bro, so shut the fuck up.
Well, that's pretty awesome.
Well, just that phrase alone, that definitely brings me back to just some random bullshit of my own, of freaking, let's see here. There's only so many ways I can do it without trash talking to other podcasters.
Ooh.
basically what happened was, let's see here. Yeah, this one I don't know what I can do. What happened was, I think I had something I wanted. Oh yeah, you know what? Yeah, let's go ahead and just go all the way here. Let's just talk about Dan for a second here.
Oh boy.
Basically, what I wanted Dan to do is I just wanted him to, like, you know, acknowledge that we were, like, trying to get in touch with him. And if anyone's been paying attention to the forums for Crosstalk, because...
You wanted him to play.
Even though Barry... We want him to come along and say, hey.
Yeah, just and to say, hey, what's going on, bro?
He was, you know, giving us such a cold shoulder that I decided to kick it up a notch and go for, you know, his Google Plus page or his Twitter page. I was asking people to do it. One guy does it. He deletes it, makes no reference that something happened, completely try to, like, dismiss us, like, no matter what. And I'm at the point where if he doesn't acknowledge my pet project to get him on the freaking show, I'm going to have to go so damn far that the only thing that's going to stop me is him really giving us a restraining.
You're going to go past the event horizon here. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
We may find out. Alex Swing will maybe not be here next week because he'll be in prison.
Oh, dear.
Local Oregon, you know, like a local Portland man caught with in a car, you know, covered in piss bottles.
So you're about to go, what was the female astronaut who had the adult diapers?
Oh, Lisa Novak.
That's what I was referencing.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're about to go Lisa Novak on poor Dan Maru's chat.
Oh, no, I definitely won't go that far, but I just want him to do is say, hey, I noticed you're trying to get my attention. I don't want to hang out with you. Just say it.
Oh, wow.
Because I do hate it when people do that, where, like, they don't just come out and be honest and, like, you know, break your heart. They want to pretend to egg you on. Hmm. And for him, the lack of response, that eggs me on. Because that just tells me that you're not willing to communicate right now. But what if I do this?
Yeah.
But, yeah, when people lock you out, I mean, I think people believe, and this is where the, where people fail to, I think, understand the psychology of trolls. What you always hear on the internet is, don't feed the trolls, right? Well, maybe that works for some trolls.
Yeah.
But you know what? If I'm trolling somewhere, and someone doesn't feed me, that makes me think, shit, I need to escalate this. I need to up my game.
Yeah.
You know? If you're starving, you're going to do whatever you need to do to get that meal.
See, that's true.
When the troll is starving, the troll is going to... If he has to be outside your door with wearing adult diapers...
Yeah.
And here's the thing, though. Honestly, we are not really trolling Dan. There's just no other way to contact him.
That's true.
In a legitimate form that he lets you speak to us, so it's the equivalent of putting him on blast.
Yeah. No, I honestly like Dan Maruschak.
Yeah, Dan Maruschak is awesome.
I am a personal fan of Dan Maruschak, but it's just basically his personality is such a high contrast to what's on Mom's Basement Podcast.
Yeah.
It's the perfect, like, target.
Yeah.
Because it's the antithetical podcast, right? It's the antithesis to our podcast is designer versus reality. So I almost feel like there should be kind of a rivalry there. I mean, yeah. Dan himself, he's a cool guy. I just feel like, I just want, I don't know, like podcast wars or something.
Yeah.
Basically, you guys have been doing it, so I've been swinging with it. What the hell?
Yeah, not even trying.
Yeah.
All right. What time we have? I think we've.
Oh, we're a little bit past an hour.
But there was
people now know our love for Dan.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
I still had a few more items though that I fished out of the hope chest.
You know what? If you think that there's something there, you gotta show it. You have to.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I can say this. I have two. There's two things left that I wanted to mention. One thing I found in there, and I shit you not, is a Bush Quail 92 sign. I don't. 1992. I was 8 years old. Yeah, I was 8 years old in 1992. What the fuck was I doing with a Bush Quail sign?
Wow.
And what 8-year old backs Bush Quail anyway?
It's not exactly his demographic.
No.
It's a man. It's a boy who values morals and principles, and you know,
and no more
all that
taxes
nonsense. Yeah. You're totally against taxes.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I just like the idea that, like, you know, you're that young, and all of a sudden someone, you know, because that just reminds me, I actually am going to go off on this one. This one's pretty good. There was a, when I was, like, in the fourth grade, they brought up Gore and Bush, you know, for the whole, like, you know, a big hoopla about what was going on with them, and then they did the most one-sided argument, because, you know, one guy was for, like, more education money. One guy didn't really give two craps about it. And so, you know, Bush was. He didn't care about increasing the education budget. Mm-hmm. And so they gave the most lopsided, like, you know, point-counterpoint of who was the best choice just to try and make us go, like, yeah, Gore should be it, and let's go tell our parents that, you know.
Yeah.
Like, you know, one guy's for bigger class, you know, smaller classrooms and more time to study. One guy doesn't, you know, one guy wants bigger classrooms and less time to study. You know, which one do you want?
Less time to study, kind of, please.
Yeah, I see that.
Yeah, it kind of backfired for us because we wanted more people and less time to study because we just wanted to play.
Right.
But you get what I'm I'm saying, though. Like, I can just see that, like, for you. Like, the guy said, like, to you, like, handing the pen, it's like, yeah, you don't want your parents to pay more taxes, right? And it's followed by, mm-hmm. And then, like, you got your pen.
You know,
all right, so what's the last, okay, go ahead.
Okay, no. Well, what's funny is that at the time of Bush Quail, I'm pretty sure both of my parents were, like, serious. Well, no, my mom was supporting Ross Perot.
Oh,
my mom was a big Ross Perot supporter. I remember that. But anyway, and I don't think there were any Bush Quail supporters in my family, with the apparent exception of me, I guess. So anyway, I saved the greatest treasure for last. A fucking calendar from 1991. Fucking Nintendo calendar from 1991.
Oh, wow. I remember those.
January was The Legend of Zelda. February was Super Mario Brothers 2. And these are beautiful fucking pictures.
Wow.
They're like sprite style shit.
Yeah, no, those calendars were awesome.
Fucking Metroid. Fucking Punch-Out. Super Mario Brothers. Zelda 2. The most polarizing of Zelda games.
Hmm.
Yeah, because it wasn't even close to what the first one was.
Right. It was a side-scroller.
Mm-hmm.
Man, this was... The point is, it's a beautiful fucking calendar. This is a fucking treasure right here. And I don't care if it's over 2 decades out of date. It's going to come back. It's going to be relevant again. Someday. Actually, let me see. Maybe it's right for this year. March... April 14th is a Sunday. Shit, it's Friday.
Oh, that's sad.
Today's the Friday and it's Sunday, so it's not this year. Maybe next year I can hang it up.
Meh.
Or the year after. Not this year. It's not 1991 again yet.
Nope.
Oh. You know what, I probably missed it. A few years ago, I could have hung it up again.
Well, now you got something to look forward to.
Yeah.
One thing in my life. Gotta live long enough to be able to hang up a 1991 Nintendo Power calendar again.
Yeah.
It's a reason to go on. And on that particularly depressing note... Maybe this is why we don't do random bullshit casts.
And random bullshit is awesome, though.
Ever since Mike, you know, decided to stop, you know, podcasting, there isn't enough random gossip that no one gives two shits about to use for random bullshit.
That's true.
See, that's true.
And this is what real random bullshit is, when you don't have anything to talk about, period.
That's true. Nothing at all.
I can tell you some things, but it involves just bashing other people. But you can't have that.
We've already made one enemy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But poor Mike too. I wonder if Mike still listens to the podcast.
I think I asked him, and he said he didn't.
Oh.
By the way, Rudy, if you can, just, like, stop it right then and there.
Okay.
Wait, are we still recording?
Oh, yeah, we're totally still recording. Booyah. Hey,
you're not going to stop it.
No, I'm not.
Oh, that would
have been...
I thought I told you that we won't stop.
Alright, well then I'm just gonna unplug the microphone.